Good morning. Welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN Weekly for Saturday, April 20th, 2024. And our top story today is the stock market sell-off over. Joining me now to discuss this and a lot more, Jane King is joining us from the NASDAQ. Jane, so great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us again on the program this morning.
Great to be back, Jeffrey.
And by the way, before we get started on kind of the market breakdown, how was your week? Did you have a great week? And you do every day, you're doing like, what, 5 to 10 hits on local TV stations. So how did that all go?
Oh, yeah, it was very uneventful, very smooth, which I like. I don't like technical problems. So, and there's about 25 live reports that I do. So it's
and the market, Jane, really probably kept you on your toes. I mean, I know you to be very focused on the news that comes across your screen. A lot of ups and downs in the market. But generally, let's start with how did the market do this week?
Yeah, well, I think it's probably going to be another down week. We've been down for several days in a row, depending on which index that you look at. And they just, you know, we've had a slog through April and just haven't been able to shake it off. There's been talks about no interest rate cuts. That's been impacting the markets. There's geopolitical issues. There's bank earnings, Netflix earnings. I mean, seemed like each day there was some major event that kind of drove the market action.
Yeah, so that 40% return that we were talking about at the end of the Q1, I think that's
reversion seems to be, the mean.
Yeah, yes. Reversion to the mean, folks, and that is a term that we all need to become accustomed to. Jane, some interesting economic data. I think I saw that employment numbers were up. Manufacturing data in the Mid-Atlantic was up. So the economy keeps plugging along, and I think it puts the Federal Reserve in an interesting position when it comes to rate cuts or rate increases.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is, you know, it's not an easy thing to read. And it's almost like day by day, week by week economic data. But I do think the market has priced out an interest rate cut. Certainly, you know, probably till July at the earliest, this would happen. And then a lot of things can happen between now and then. So I think, you know, as we've pushed that further and further away, that's one of the things that the market has been upset about this week.
Yeah, Jane, I want to touch on this next one very sensitively because they're all opinions on all sides. But geopolitical tensions heating up. We've already got the war going on in Ukraine. That has created a lot of concerns for the market. Let's talk about this further flare up of the Middle East tensions between Israel and Iran. Oil prices went up. They didn't go down. They've kind of pivoted up and down depending on what's going on.
They react quickly to this news, and not just oil, but stocks, Bitcoin. When we saw the missiles against Israel over the weekend, we saw Bitcoin drop by quite a bit.
Thanks. Why was that? Why would Bitcoin be so?
I know it doesn't totally make sense.
Correlate to me.
Unless it's just people like, I'm getting out of everything. And I'm getting out of it. You know, it's not directly related. In fact, I would think that Bitcoin would be kind of a safe haven like gold would be in times like this when currencies are fluctuating. But that is not what happened. So, you know, it's hard to tell what exactly drives Bitcoin on a day-to-day basis. But the most recent news was Israel retaliating against Iran. And we did see as soon as that news broke a Thursday late, we saw oil up by as much as 3%. Stocks, the Dow was down 245. When I looked at it, it might have been more than that at some point. So there was an immediate reaction. But as things become clearer, people are speaking out. They're talking about how maybe this will make quiet things down for a while. Everybody kind of got what they wanted. That, you know, maybe, you know, we're seeing the market settle down. So, of course, that situation could change quickly. But for the moment, it seems like things are quiet.
Yeah, I guess that's a good thing in a lot of ways. But Jane, just to kind of, let's talk about the consumer, the American consumer in particular for a few minutes. I went to go fill up my car. We have one car, my wife's car, because she drives it. Gas prices going up. So I wonder how these oil fluctuations will correlate. And also the conversion to a summer blend, you know, these different refinery protocols that are required in each state. So What does that mean for consumer prices? And by the way, the minimum wage hike in California having devastating effects on fast food prices.
That's right. There was a study this week, and they did various fast food prices, and all of the fast food chains except McDonald's raised their prices by about 7-8%. They looked at, a handful of them. So we saw an immediate impact there. Now, we did hear Lael Brainard, she's an economic advisor to the White House, to talk about how the White House would tap the Strategic Petroleum Reserve again if they had to. It is an election year. And gas prices, I mean, if they start going up, I mean, that is not going to be good for Joe Biden. So the trouble is the Strategic Petroleum Reserve has been tapped a few times in the past few years, and it's already at the lowest level since the 80s. So that puts you in a bit of a risky position security wise. So it's not something you want to do unless you have to, but the White House says that they will do that. They had talked about buying more oil, but oil has gone up in price. So it's a lot more expensive now than it was a year ago. So they didn't buy at the right time. So, I guess consumers are still having to travel. And in fact, the travel companies, United, Cruise Lines, Delta, all this week say they expect another perhaps record summer travel season this year. So even though there's inflation and the consumers on some shaking ground in some areas, we still want to go places.
Yeah, by the way, planes use gasoline, maybe a different type of gasoline, but they use jet fuel,
That's right.
which is built on oil. So
That's right.
those costs inherently may go up as well. Well, Jane, I guess we'll have to wait and see how things going. Very interesting conversation. Great analysis as always, and we look forward to having you back on the program again next week.
See you next week.
Thanks, Jane. Great to see you. Thanks for sharing your perspective. And when we come back, we take a look at some of the best segments for the week. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN Weekly. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms?
Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy.
Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries.
33 years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you gotta start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're gonna change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network. Welcome back. It was another great week of shows with great topics and, of course, great guests. We kicked off the week with a look at how the pension risk transfer market is heating up. Let's take a look.
When we think about pension risk transfer, a company that maintains a pension plan, they bear all of the risk. And so by doing a risk transfer, they're transferring it to some other entity. And that's done typically in two ways. One way is by offering an individual in that pension plan the opportunity to cash their benefit out. So instead of taking it as an annuity, say when they turn age 65 and getting payments for the rest of their life, actuaries will calculate the present value of that payment stream, and a company will be able to offer that to a participant, and they can take it as a lump sum cash out, and then they can roll that over into a 401k IRA. And effectively, the company's transferred risk from themselves to the individual. So that's one way. The more common, when we refer to PRT, the more common way that that is done is a company actually going and saying, hey, I'm going to go out to the insurance market and say, hey, rather than me pay these people a certain monthly benefit amount when they turn 65, how much would you charge me to do that instead? And so they'll go out to the insurance market and they will transfer their pension liabilities to an insurance company for a premium. And at that point, the insurance company becomes responsible for managing all of the risks associated with paying those benefits to those people based on the terms of the provisions of the plan. And effectively, then the companies transferred risk from themselves to an insurance company. In 2012, we saw two large pension risk transfer transactions, one for GM and one for Verizon. And it used to be prior to those two transactions, which totaled, if I remember correctly, over $30 billion. Prior to that, the pension risk transfer market was somewhere at $2 billion or less per year. And it was largely due to plans that were terminating and going through that process and transferring all of their risk to an insurance company. But GM and Verizon in 2012 really opened the floodgates to this market that has steadily grown since then. Now, after 2012, it dropped back down, but it's steadily grown since then to where we even hit a high watermark in 2022, where the pension risk transfer market transacted over $50 billion in pension liabilities that were transferred from companies to those insurers. We haven't seen the final numbers in 2023. It's expected to be in the 40 billion plus range. And 2024 estimates are already assuming that we're going to be $45 billion plus. The way that you should look at this is just like any other transaction involving pension plan money. So you view it from the perspective of fiduciary. So you've got a fiduciary committee that has to act in the best interest of plan participants. And so when there are several procedures that are out there that companies will go through to document that they have followed a prudent process in selecting that insurer that they want to transfer those benefit liabilities to. So they'll generally there's generally three parties involved from a service provider standpoint that a company will work with. One is a bid or transaction specialist. They're the ones that are responsible for getting bids from the different insurers that are interested. They obviously are trying to help optimize what that is from a plan sponsor perspective. It's more of a settler function rather than a fiduciary function. But at the end of the day, you view all of this as this, we're talking about disposition of assets from a qualified plan to another entity. You do have to view it from a fiduciary lens in total. The other party that you'll see involved commonly is what's known as an independent expert. This independent expert is responsible for doing the due diligence on the various insurers that are interested in taking on those pension liabilities, which in the market today, there's about 20 different insurers that participate here. And they all have different things that they like to focus on. You have some that focus on huge transactions over $1 billion. You have others that say, you know, we don't want anything more than 20 million. And you have everything in between. But the independent expert will go out and evaluate these insurers on very specific criteria that were outlined by the Department of Labor in their interpretive bulletin 95-1. It basically says you can't just rely on credit ratings alone to evaluate an insurer and whether or not they're able to provide what's deemed in the standard the safest available annuity. And so you look at things like how their general account assets are invested, other lines of business that they have exposure to, the size of the transaction relative to the overall general account of the insurer. You also look at things like, is this being guaranteed by the or backed by the general account or a separate account? A separate account provides just a little bit more security there. And then you also look at the state guarantee protections. Because once those benefit liabilities leave that qualified corporate pension plan and go to the insurer, they're no longer backed by the Pension Benefit Guarantee Corporation. Those insurers, though, are backed by state guarantee associations, and they have different limits in terms of what they will back for a participant's benefit. So you do all of that, and then the company needs to decide, well, do these insurance companies meet that safest available annuity criteria? And what's clear in the standard is that they say that you can actually determine that more than one insurer is capable of providing that safest available annuity. So you go through that process, determine which insurers meet that criteria, go through some sort of bid process, which different providers have different processes for how they do that. Select an insurer, you sign basically a sales agreement with them that says, yep, we are going to lock in this price, we are going to transfer these benefit liabilities to them, and then you start the transition process with the insurer.
Next up, we discussed paying for college when you're laid off. Let's take a look.
Yeah, it's a tough situation to be in, and one that I was once in and worked my way through it, having planned ahead for the college costs. But regardless, Depending on the manner in which you've already prepared for the time in which you find yourself, which is your child about to go to college, you'll want to make various adjustments. One would be certainly and immediately to talk to your child about the reality of the situation. Depending on how much you have saved or don't have saved, you'll want to let them know that there may need to be an adjustment in the types of schools that they're considering, depending on the net cost after financial aid is awarded. Having that realistic conversation will be difficult, but necessary. And in fact, it's going to help your child in the future because they'll learn about how to adjust during difficult periods and maybe develop some resilience through it. The second thing that you could do is contact and should do is contact a target school, a school that your child has been accepted to, who has or has not yet offered a financial aid package, but to let them know that there's been a sudden change in your circumstances. Let them know that your child really desires that institution, but you're concerned about the cost. And share with them, to the extent you can, any evidence of what this sudden change is. If you have a letter from your employer on company letterhead that shows you've been laid off, or you now have an unemployment earnings statement, or you can show with a prior paycheck just how little you've earned this year to date, I think that could be extremely helpful. And there are things your child can do together with you. They could start at a less expensive school if the school they really want isn't possible. They can live at home for that first year and then aspire to the dream school. But it's going to be a period in time when the family needs to work together and you will get through it. And parents need to offer themselves some grace during this time. It's really a difficult circumstances, but in some cases like my own, it turned out to be one of the brightest times in my life because I was able to pursue a form of employment after losing the job I love so much that actually has benefited so many others through the process. I built a program here in New York City or helped design and launch it, whereby now over 200,000 public school kindergartners have college accounts. And I could have never done that had I not been unemployed and stumbled upon that program being built. So you never know in these dark days how things will turn out, but I assure you, you will get to the next phase and look back and realize that you made it through. That's exactly right. And I always tell people to envision the outcome they want to see. My desire was that my son would graduate without the crushing debt that his dad and I had accumulated through our undergraduate and graduate school years. And I held that vision close to my heart and my mind, and I took steps to achieve it. And it's a matter of knowing what you want, imagining how good it will feel, and then backing into the steps that you'll need to take to achieve it. You don't need to save it all, but you do need to get started. And you should be engaging others in your savings process. Friends, family, even your employer can help with your college savings accounts. Your loved ones don't know what to buy your child from the time they're born to the time they graduate. Tell them you prefer a modest contribution, a contribution of any size towards their college account, in lieu of or in addition to a much smaller gift. Your house will be less cluttered and your child's account will be better funded, and everyone will sleep better at night knowing they contributed toward that very important goal.
Yeah, I agree. Forget the PlayStation or the Xbox, or at least the next game. You know what? Madden 2024, it's going to be kind of the same as Madden 2023. I don't think you need it. Anyway, that's my personal opinion. I'm sorry, Madden, the Madden folks out there, the game. We love your game. Patricia, we're going to have to leave it there. Great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us. And we look forward to having you back on the program again very soon.
Thanks so much.
And that wraps up this episode of BRN Weekly. Have a topic of interest, someone you think we should talk to, then drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news and lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more in all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Well, then visit our website. Hey, we're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRN Sunday. I'll be joined by the Legal Eagles, David Levine and Kevin Walsh of Groom Law Group, and Oliver Rennick of the Schwab Network. So until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving. Don't forget, roll with the changes. Now is your opportunity to co-create content around any topic on the First Lifestyle and Wellness Network. Reach a global audience through our platform and co-own exclusive branded content. All of our programs are available on demand and also as audio-only podcasts, so you can take us on the go. Broadcast Retirement Network, available anytime, anywhere, and on any device.